Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Kevin Moore Show. I'm Kevin Moore, and it is a pleasure to be spending the next hour with you. Our opening musical selection was Promises, Promises, a wonderful song from the great composer Burt Bacharach. And that's what I have for all of you today, the promise that this next hour will be informative, interesting, provocative, and maybe even a little exciting. A promise that our discussions will give you something to think about today and hopefully something to talk about tomorrow. Or what I'd like to think of as a civilized hour of culture and conversation. Well, as I like to do to begin each of our shows, I like to read or share a recent poignant story or an especially interesting essay or some philosophical quotes or thoughts or sometimes even a little poetry that touches or speaks to us all. Well, everyone, don't forget Valentine's Day. And that's something that is very important. Read a little essay by Richard Roper entitled Sexism, Injustice, Pain, It's All in the Valentine Monologues. Who's responsible for Valentine's Day becoming a major commercial and romantic event featuring cards and flowers and dinner reservations and the giving of the bling? Who's behind the dubious trend of some houses and businesses actually displaying elaborate Valentine's Day decorations in their windows and on their doors for weeks before the big day? Who's the driving force behind Valentine's Day as a marketing phenomenon? A huge date night for restaurants and theaters, an advertising gimmick, a near-official American holiday? Nope. We can't blame it on the greeting card companies or the chocolate manufacturers or the jewelers or even those mysterious people in Vermont who have devoted their lives to making cutesy-themed teddy bears. Sure, the romantic product industries have a vested interest in Valentine's Day, and they've aggressively contributed to its frightening growth, but it's not corporate America that should be held responsible for making Valentine's Day a holiday. It's women. Without women, Valentine's Day would die a quick death. Without the input of women, February 14th would be just another cold day. A generalization? You betcha, but it's an accurate one. I wish we could test it right now. I wish we could ask the men of this country just one question. Should Valentine's Day exist? What do you think the results would be? How many men would actually vote to keep Valentine's Day on the calendar? Zero. Not even that guy in Will and Grace. Valentine's Day exists because women want it to exist. We can talk all we want about men and women being equal and wanting the same things, but the truth is that women, most women, are thrilled about the existence of Valentine's Day, and most, if not all, men would rather catch a head cold than observe the rituals of Valentine's Day. Of course, you could take a stand. You could tell your honey that you don't believe in Valentine's Day and you're not going to be co-opted by a commercialized holiday. If you want to demonstrate your love, you don't need Hallmark to do your talking for you. You're a rebel, an individualist, a man's man. You're not going to send flowers or take her out to dinner or buy her treats just because the advertising agencies and the fluffy articles in the newspaper say you should. One might think a woman would appreciate a man who thinks for himself like that. And one would be wrong. The man who tells a woman he doesn't celebrate or believe in Valentine's Day is not rewarded or applauded. He is branded as a terminal cheapskate and a thoughtless oaf. Even if the woman in his life smiles sweetly and says, "That's all right, honey, I don't care about Valentine's Day." Inside, she is thinking, "You stupid jerk. How am I supposed to go to work and act happy when all the women around me are getting flowers and sappy phone calls? You're just a jerk." The only way this Valentine's Day madness could be reined in would be if millions of women of all ages decided to put a stop to it. If women led the movement to simplify and scale back Valentine's Day, to make it less of an event, well, they have that power. Men. Imagine if the woman in your life came to you this morning and said, "Honey, please don't plan anything special for Valentine's Day this year. In fact, I insist that we don't do anything. If you want to take me to dinner or send me flowers or tell me how much you love me, do it when you sincerely want to do it, not when the calendar says you're supposed to do so." That's not love. That's cultural peer pressure. Until the woman lets the man off the hook for Valentine's Day, the man is on the hook for Valentine's Day. It's their holiday, and we're just slaves to it. Make sure you get something for Valentine's Day. Photos Dance Chicago's 23rd anniversary winter concerts, titled Chicago Inspired, premise a rich tapestry of dance anchored by rarely performed works by Chicago native and Broadway legend Bob Fosse, restaged by Ann Reinking. Recreations of works by Chicago modern dance pioneer Sybil Scheer and cutting-edge present-day creations by Melissa Thotos, Garfield Lemonius, Brian Enos, John Cartwright, and Tenley Dorrell. Thotos Dance's Chicago-inspired concerts are Saturday, February 21st at 2 and 7:30 at North Shore Center for the Performing Arts in Skokie, 9501 Skokie Boulevard. And Chicago-inspired will also be presented Saturday, March 7th at 7:30 at the Harris Theater for Music and Dance, 205 East Randolph in Chicago. The program includes a revival of Thotos Dance Chicago audience favorite Fosse Trilogy, a trio of three rarely performed works from Bob Fosse's archives, originally created for TV in the late 60s, set on Thotos Dance more than 30 years later with a new transition choreography by Broadway and film veteran and Fosse collaborator Ann Reinking. No one is better than Reinking at channeling the great man, wrote the Chicago Tribune when Fosse Trilogy debuted in 2009. And here she glories in the inimitable quirks, microscopic gestures, and mischievous love of line and the body that makes Fosse's work irresistible. Dance Magazine praised its in-your-face theatricality, adding, clear intention, honest impulse, and streamlined design characterize the subtle sophistication of Fosse's aesthetic. 360s pop songs Cool Hand Luke, Tijuana Shuffle, and Mexican Breakfast there, the retro score for this sassy celebration of Fosse's work. Behind the scenes, the savvy observer will note Fosse's choreography for Mexican Breakfast, originally created for the Ed Sullivan Show in 1969 and featuring his wife, Gwen Verdon, fronting a trio of dancers, was the template for Beyoncé's wildly popular Single Ladies video. Also in the program, well, I'm going to let our first very special guest tell us about that. And on the line with us right now is a nationally recognized and award-winning choreographer, having performed worldwide, one of Chicago's 100 women making a difference. A choreographer with, as critics have praised, a bright and lively imagination, emphasizing the creation of a well-defined mood, interesting group patterns, and attention to design in her work. Teacher, mentor, one of the brightest stars in the world of dance, and the founder and artistic director of Thotos Dance Chicago, now presenting their winter engagement entitled Chicago Inspired, February 21st at North Shore Center for the Performing Arts in Skokie, and March 7th at Harris Theater for Music and Dance, 205 East Randolph. And the line with us right now is Melissa Thotos. Melissa, welcome back to the Kevin Moore Show.
Oh, Kevin, thank you so much. It's thrilling and delightful to be back on your show. I just love it.
Much like watching Thotos dance on stage. Thrilling and delightful. And what a great programs you have coming up here in a week or so. And certainly what's nice about it too, Melissa, is the people from the north side can see it up in Skokie and the people in Chicago can see it at Harris. That's a great idea.
Yeah, that's exactly right. We want to reach as many audiences as possible with what we do. We want to do that locally here in Chicago in the metropolitan area, and we'd love going on tour nationally and internationally and reaching new audiences with what we build here in Chicago and with what inspires us here.
Well, just being kind of a rookie talking about it, you know, you look at Bob Fosse's work or style, and you look at Jerome Robbins, you think of West Side Story, and they're clicking their fingers and so forth and snapping their fingers. And you see Fosse and you think, well, that's the tip of the hat and kind of the hip kind of goes a certain way, and that's Bob Fosse. And you know that's his style. It's kind of nice to put that on stage.
Oh, it's an honor and a thrill to put Bob Fosse's work on stage. He is such an important American legacy. And his work is part of our American Dance Legacy Project, because the whole mission of my company in terms of dance aesthetic is to champion and celebrate the American voice in dance, both past and present. And the iconic Bob Fosse is someone who is a really important person in our history. And bringing these very early works of Bob's that were created specifically for film in the early 1960s to the stage so that a live audience can experience them is particularly satisfying for me as a director and choreographer and artistic director of a company.
And so nobody does it as well as you, of course. And your relationship with Ann Reinking is very very stunning, I think. And, of course, she was a great collaborator of Bob Fosse's. How did you happen to meet her? How did you happen to get involved with Anne?
Oh, Anne and I, it was fate. It's a beautiful, wonderful, serendipitous story. Her husband and my husband were tennis doubles partners in New York for many, many years.
Really? That's interesting.
And when I met my husband many years ago, I would join him on tennis tournaments. I actually, when I actually find some time, like to play tennis too. I was on a team in high school.
Really?
And so Rick had said, oh, my friend Peter is dating someone, and you'll really love it because she's involved in dance. And so you guys will have all this stuff to talk about while you're watching this tennis ball bounce back and forth while we're playing. And so we go to a tournament in Florida, and it's just so charming. And and I asked to meet Peter's girlfriend, and she was at, I think, the buffet, or wife at the time. And she turned around, and it was Anne. And I hadn't known that. I just knew that Peter was with someone who was involved in dance. I didn't know it was Anne. And as soon as she turned around, my jaw dropped to the floor. And it was a very special meeting because it was a meeting of in an environment where we could really get to know each other as people and talk about aesthetic and what we cared about and what was important to us in dance and also in life. And we became very fast friends, and that's what kind of led into our relationship as colleagues and as collaborators. It started very organically, very serendipitously, and it puts a smile on my face when I think about it.
Been lucky for all of us.
Yes, and that she can come and work with the company. We began by her coming and setting her own choreography on the company. She set a beautiful piece. I remember one year, I was curating a season, and I had a lot of very dark pieces. And I said, Anne, we need something uplifting and fun. And so I said, think of something that'll really pick this audience up so I can, because I take a lot of time to curate the evening, and it's guiding the audience through a whole evening, and it needs ebbs and flows and highs and lows and all of those wonderful things that make an evening of dance expression so satisfying for an audience. And so she came to the first day of rehearsal, and she said, okay, please let's send your assistant out, and I'm going to need 6 trampolines and 12 frisbees and some long-stem roses, not real ones, silk roses. And she created an incredibly wonderful work in a true aesthetic of kind of the ranking Fosse blend, if you will, because she has her own really beautiful mode of moving that is very informed by her work with Bob Fosse and on Broadway. And she created an incredible piece called Rossini Recess, what dancers would do if they could go out and play. And it just was delightful. And so that was our first collaboration together. And then our Fosse trilogy came about through a lot of talks, and we received a National Endowment for the Arts Dance Masterpiece Genius Grant to remount that work. And working with the Fosse Foundation and with Anne, we mounted these three works. That was our second project together, where Anne came in, and then she choreographed the transitions between all of these works. And she had actually performed these works as well, in addition to Gwen Verdon. Anne was very familiar with these works, and it's particularly Cool Hand Luke, which she could teach in her sleep. I mean, it's so very much in her. Mm-hmm. And so so that was our second collaboration together. And then we decided we wanted to, our second working together, and then we decided we wanted to collaborate more extensively and work together equally on a project that was created by both of us. And that is where our Story Ballet initiative came from. And we created The White City, which is the story about Chicago's Columbian Exposition.
Great dance.
Yeah, and we just performed that at the Auditorium Theater last November. Right. It was such an exciting thing to do. And that's a piece that has been performed extensively, both here in Chicago and on tour. And then our second Story Ballet, which just literally returned from tour last Saturday, is A Light in the Dark, which is the story of Helen Keller and Anne Sullivan. And that piece has been performed also extensively here in Chicago and on tour. So that was our second Story Ballet. So that is, you know, in a nutshell, you know, the history of of our collaboration as artists to date.
And all of it very successful. And they say, of course, dance is timeless. And it's certainly exhibited in the Fosse trilogy in that, Melissa, this was first performed on the Ed Sullivan Show 45 years ago. That's remarkable.
Exactly. And our big incentive to bring these works to a live audience really falls upon the fact that if you were not alive and watching these variety shows, Perry Cuomo, Bob Hope Comedy Hour, right, Ed Sullivan, if you weren't watching them at the time, you'd never experience or know that these works even existed. And they're so good.
You know, I've asked you this before, and for those who are listening for the first time, it's always fascinating to me. What comes first, the music or your idea for the dance?
Oh, choreographically, for me, I work many, many different ways, as do many artists. I have, over the past 30 years, created a dance and given a video of the dance to a composer to create music. I have very often started with the music, and then the inspiration for the movement is driven by the music. And then I've worked in between where I have an idea of something, and then I search for the right music to fit that idea. So there are many, many ways to develop a piece, and there are many different processes. And so it's a chicken and egg question, and it remains that because everybody works very differently. I have worked in, having had the opportunity to create for over 30 years, I have chosen for me to challenge myself in trying new ways to create and new processes. So that's what my story has been.
No one answer to that question. Of course, the Thotos mission is inspiring expression through dance education and dance creation and performance. You ever see a dance where you say, I could do that a little different, like to try it a little differently?
Someone else's work, or do I do that with my own
Well,
work?
I suppose to both, I guess, huh?
Well, I am, the only time that a work of mine is truly finished is when I'm no longer around.
So, in other words, work in progress, right?
Whenever I am creating and whenever one of my works is mounted on the company, I always make changes. I always tweak it. I always, not big changes. It remains true to its initial focus and inspiration. But there are always new things to do. So that's how I approach it.
Well, of course, Fosse Trilogy is only one of the performances that we're going to enjoy. Near Light, something that you put together.
Yes, Near Light. It's a very, very special piece to me. And it's a piece that I've been workshopping for about a couple of years now. And it's a work that kind of takes an audience through a process of loss and then reconnection, and then it ends with hope and moving forward. And I wanted to address the experiences that we all share as humans on this planet. Of we all experience loss in some capacity in our lives, and we all find ways to reconnect and to move forward in light of those losses. So that was the inspiration for my work.
And it's a work in progress.
Yeah, it is, although it's actually finished, and I'm so excited about it. I'm so excited to premiere this work. It's a very special piece for me, and I'm really excited for Chicago audiences to experience it with me.
And a work by Garfield Lemonius, Memoirs.
Yes, Garfield is a very special artist. He is a professor of dance at Point Park College, and Point Park is one of the top conservatories of dance in the country. Many of our dancers come from Point Park, and they're very prepared. And he began his career at Dallas Black Dance Theater, and he has an extensive background in teaching and in performing. And I had the opportunity to meet him by being on faculty at the Broadway Theater Project every summer. I've been on the faculty there for the summer for over a decade now, and he's come in from Point Park, and I meet many new artists, and he is an artist that I was really inspired to get to know, and I've gotten to know his work as well. And Memoirs is a stunning piece. It will be closing our performance, and I can't wait for our audiences to experience his work. He's a new artist. Garfield's work has not been seen by Chicago audiences yet, so I'm excited to reveal him to our community.
And I would imagine sitting on that group in Broadway gives you the opportunity to immerse yourself in a lot of different ideas, as they do with you, but to get and learn and meet some new people in the world of dance.
Without a doubt, in the world of dance and also acting. I mean, I work alongside some amazing other artists in the Broadway idiom, and Ben Vereen, for example. I mean, I workshopped parts of Near Light at Broadway Theater Project, and he came in and helped me to direct the piece.
Wow.
He's just a very special man and also has Chicago ties. So, yes, I love interacting and with people from other mediums as well, because we really share creative thoughts and ideas. And, again, the more I am in this industry, it's over, you know, I've been doing this for many, many years. I really love to go out of my comfort zone as well and learn about some other modes of expression, theatrics and all of that. It's really satisfying for me.
And another dance will be Brian Enos's Lullaby.
Yes, that's a very special piece. We have a very unique component of the company, and it's nationally unique. And every summer, as an organization, we produce the works of our own artists here at Thotis Dance Chicago as choreographers. Our dancers are all invited to join the company through an audition based on their abilities, of course, and their technical abilities as performers, but also based on their inspiration and talents as choreographers. And so we produce them every summer in something called New Dances, and it's a production every July that happens annually every July. And this year it will be our 15-year anniversary. This Brian Enos was a guest artist in this particular initiative of the company, and he premiered Lullaby in New Dances as our special guest artist. We have one guest artist every year, and it's a piece, after seeing it in that forum, it's a piece that I really liked, so I invited it to join the repertory of the company, and it's been part of our repertory since. And what's really wonderful in talking to Brian about the work, when I took it from New Dances to the repertory of the company to tour and perform in our home season, he really did create it specially for this company. It's kind of like, you know, he wanted it to be a glove that really fit well. So it's a piece that was really meant to be just for us. So it's a very unique and beautiful work that, again, fits us well because the choreographer really wanted to make it so.
How many members are in Thotis Dance Chicago?
Thotis Dance Chicago has 12 dancers.
12 dancers. And you keep that number, you add, you subtract, or?
No, 12. Well, 12 is the max. Uh-huh. In the industry, we're called mid-size, kind of like a car,
okay.
I suppose. But that is the size that I want, because I want to be able to give each artist in the company as much attention as I can as they continue to grow as dancers and teachers and choreographers. And so I do not want the company to increase in size beyond that.
And as a dancer, and I guess only a dancer could answer this, does a dancer always want to sometimes, or have as an aspiration, perform and write their own dance routine?
No. Dancers don't always want that experience. There are some dancers in the world and community who just want a performance experience.
Uh-huh.
That's all they want. And that wouldn't be a good fit for our company, because we spend 3 months out of the year focusing on their development as choreographers. So, as I had said earlier, as part of our audition process, we spend a lot of time viewing choreography created by those that attend the auditions, and we spend a lot of time interviewing these candidates to see where their interests lie, because if their interests are only in performance, then it's not a good fit for us.
So you have to have a very well-rounded individual that finally ends up with Thotis Dance Chicago.
I think that we do. Someone who is interested in a well-rounded experience, and that is why our dancers have degrees in dance from universities, colleges, and from conservatories, because they've made the choice to major in dance. And when you go through a university or college or conservatory dance experience, you are fostered and nurtured in all three of those areas. You train in your dance technique, and you create. You always have to do a senior concert, so you have to develop your own work and your own choreographic voice, and you have to direct and teach as well.
Is it a democratic process, Melissa, where someone is on stage, one of your dancers, and says, you know, I know you want us to do it this way, but what if we try this?
It's only democratic if the dancers are guided to be told that that's the case.
Okay.
But no.
So it's the type of democracy known as an absolute monarchy, is what you're saying.
It's not that. It's just that when something hits the stage, it's finished. So
okay.
There's no changing of anything.
Okay.
But in a rehearsal process, I do want to point out, we do work with what's called improvisation,
mm-hmm.
and we develop work through focused direction of the choreographer or the director. So I will say, okay, dancers, here's three phrases of eight, and I want you to use the images of water, and I want you to change your facings of the room, so work with, you know, corner three, and so it's directed stuff. And then what happens is the dancers work improvisationally, and then I start pulling information that I see that I like. So I'll say, okay, Lauren is doing something. Lauren, can you teach that to the rest of the group? Great, let's build a phrase from there.
Mm-hmm.
That's the developmental process, and that happens, that kind of communication happens in the studio, but it does not happen on stage.
This is a very symphonic putting together of things. I mean, you are directing, you are coordinate everything, much like a conductor, and that's very true.
Indeed. Conductor,
yeah.
Sure, choreographer, it's true.
And a couple more works, Flawed by John Cartwright and Night Windows by Tenley Dorrell.
Yes, and these are special works because their production in this is one that really reflects our commitment to our own artists. Both of these dancers who are in the company and have been for a while, created these works in our New Dances project. So I very much am interested in producing from within and helping these choreographers to develop their own choreographic voice. And both Tenley's work, Night Windows, and John Cartwright's work, Flawed, I'm really excited to have as part of our home season.
And one I want to mention, too, and I did a little research on it because I've heard of the woman but didn't know a lot about her, and that's Sybil Scheer,
yes.
A woman who grew up in New York, worked under and learned and studied under Martha Graham, and then ended up living and dying in Northbrook.
Yes, indeed.
Kind of a maverick, kind of a mystic in modern dance. Tell us a little bit about her.
Oh, Sybil, she was an amazing force in the modern dance arena in the time that she lived, and she spent a lot of her time in New York, her early years. She danced also with Agnes DeMille, and she had a really rounded experience in her time there. And then she moved to Northbrook, and she became more reclusive.
Yeah.
She has a wonderful foundation that that really pioneers and champions her voice in dance, and I was so thrilled to have her, like Bob Fosse, be part of our American Dance Legacy project. And we produced two of Sybil's works at the Auditorium Theater last November. And we took one of those works on tour with us. And we'll be performing that work both in Skokie and at the Harris Theater. And it's a special work. It's called Salute to Old Friends. And it's just delightful. And I had the opportunity to work directly with Toby Nicholson, who is on the Morrison Scheer Foundation and was one of Sybil's dancers during her time here in the Midwest. And again, Sybil was really a contemporary of Ruth Page. So
uh-huh.
When Ruth Page was really in her heyday in the ballet arena, and I performed in Ruth Page's Nutcracker at Airy Ground.
Oh, really?
Years ago. Oh, yeah. Way back in the day, and it was loved it. Loved her. I knew her.
You weren't the Arabian woman there. That was a hottie there.
But Sybil was the modern contemporary of that time here in Chicago. And then so Toby Nicholson and I got together and reviewed some early works of Sybil's, and we decided there were two really wonderful, captivating solos that she created. It was part of a quartet of solos. And these solos were created specifically as inspired by her friendships with people and her relationships with people. And the first one is a salute to Walter Terry. And Walter was a very close friend of Sybil's and a contemporary of hers in New York City. He was a dance critic and a dance writer, and they were lifelong friends. And so she felt very inspired to create a work in his honor. So that's a beautiful solo that opens the piece. And then the second solo became a full company piece with the permission and the help of Toby Nicholson and the Morrison Shearer Foundation. So we took her second piece, and it was inspired by and dedicated to her work with Agnes DeMille. And so it's For Agnes is this title. And it we took it from its solo composition, and we were able to, with Toby and I working together as directors, we were able to expand it into a full company piece. And I'm so happy and so excited to bring her work to the stage for our home season. And we've been touring that piece as well.
That's interesting. Agnes DeMille, didn't she do choreographer Oklahoma, wasn't
yes,
she? Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
All the great choreographers, yeah. Very exciting. Always innovative, the things that Thotos Dance Chicago does. I really compliment you, Melissa, for the great job that you're doing to introduce people to dance. And you do it for young people, too. I know you have a community outreach that you go to schools and so forth, and people are able, young people are able to get a feel for what you do, and maybe that they wouldn't have that opportunity before.
Oh, we do. We love, our educational component is so important. We have a school here in Chicago. It's our youth program. It's at the Menominee Club Drucker Center. And we have a youth company that performs with us. They do lobby performances, and they also do a lot of performances on in the community in different settings. They performed at Navy Pier's Winter Wonderfest, and they perform in other festivals all throughout the city. And we have classes for all ages, and from 3 to ages 18 here at the Drucker Center. We have parking, so people can come and park and grab a cup of coffee at Starbucks while their kid is in class, really getting all of the wonderful information. And our professional dancers are the teachers in our program, which we're really proud of. And we do go into schools. We have assembly programs. We have a really neat one around our Helen Keller piece called Connections, and that's about disability awareness. Uh-huh. We do master classes and set works in the community and also on tour. So we love to teach. It's a big component of what we do, and the artists that are members of the company are, you know, it's part of the interview process. It's very important to us that they really enjoy teaching and that they want it to be part of their lives. And it's an important give back because we really need to reach the next generation with what we do. And it's important. We also are working in Humble Park at the Barreto Club, Boys and Girls Club, and we have a wonderful program there and with teaching dance. And those kids are just brilliant. It's just so satisfying. So the teaching component is definitely a big part of what we care about here.
And those kids watch that and they're saying to themselves, someday I'd like to be on that stage. And, you know, someday they will.
And we would love that. And the fact that they can see their teachers on stage, as opposed to just talking about it, they can actually come to our performance and say, hey, that's my teacher. Look what they're doing. Well, guess what? I want to do that, too. And guess what? I can do that.
There's an old saying, we make a living by what we get, but we make a life by what we give. And God bless you, you're doing that and letting those kids have that opportunity, Melissa.
Important. Thank you, Kevin.
Breathtakingly athletic, fiercely complex, powerfully beautiful, performing vibrant choreography are but a few of the critical accolades that Thotos Dance Chicago has received since its inception. This ensemble of well-rounded artists who teach, choreograph, and perform brings contemporary dance to its audience with an appealing, unique style that incorporates a variety of dance forms created and performed with innovative flair. Thotos Dance Chicago was founded in 1992 as Melissa Thotos and Dancers by Melissa Thotos, an Evanston native. The company officially became known as Thotos Dance Chicago in 2005, reflecting a move toward a broader American repertory. Thotos Dance Chicago's mission of inspiring expression through dance education, dance creation, and dance performance is the essence of the unique, compelling environment created for its ensemble members. Thotos Dance Chicago's 23rd anniversary winter concerts, titled Chicago Inspired, promise a rich tapestry of dance anchored by rarely performed works by Chicago native and Broadway legend Bob Fosse, restaged by Ann Reinking, recreations of works by Chicago modern dance pioneer Sybil Shearer, and cutting-edge present-day creations by Melissa Thotos, Garfield Lemonius, Brian Enos, John Cartwright, and Tenley Dorrell. Thotos Dance Chicago's Chicago-inspired concerts are Saturday, February 21st at 2 and 7:30 at the North Shore Center for the Performing Arts in Skokie, and on March 7th at 7:30 at the Harris Theater for Music and Dance, 205 East Randolph in Chicago. And on the line with us right now is Melissa Thodos. Melissa, always a delight to chat with you. Our conversations are so intellectually stimulating, and I very much enjoy them. I really do.
Oh, thank you so much for having me. It's always such a delight. I just love it. Thank you.
And a phone number, website, if people like to get some information?
Oh, yes, absolutely. Well, on our website, you can always click on a link to get tickets. Our phone is 312-266-6255, and we're at thodosdancechicago.org. And at North Shore, you can call 847-673-6300 for their box office for February 21st. On March 7th, you can call 312-334-7777 for their box office. And North Shore's website is northshorecenter.org. Harris Theaters is harristheaterschicago.org. So easy to get tickets. Love to have everybody come.
And I'm going to throw one more thing in there. When is the gala?
The gala is March 7th, and that's going to be so much fun. It is at the Pritzker Pavilion stage, and it's right on site immediately following the performance. And we'd love to have people join us for our benefit and celebration. The ticket price for the benefit includes the post-performance gala and also intermission cocktails. And information about our gala can be found on our website as well, thodosdancechicago.org.
Or call 312-266-6255.
That's correct.
Always a pleasure, kiddo. I wish you a lot of luck. I look forward to seeing you soon.
Thanks so much.
Thanks, Melissa.
Okay.
Melissa Thodos, one of the great ladies of Chicago Dance in Chicago. Again, February 21st at the North Shore Center for the Performing Arts in Skokie, 9501 Skokie Boulevard. For information, 847-673-6300. And then March 7th at Harris Theater for Music and Dance, 205 East Randolph, 312-334-7777. Well, we have a lot of great Chicago. Try it again.
Take two.
Well, we have a lot of great dance in Chicago, and of course, unfortunately, we won't have the opportunity to chat with our good friend Ashley Weider, as we usually do, about their winter engagement. But we will now, and it's entitled Unique Voices. On the proverbial heels of its recent record-breaking engagement of Robert Joffrey's The Nutcracker, the Joffrey Ballet continues its 2014-2015 season with Unique Voices, a winter program of three contemporary ballets, including the U.S. premiere of Thule, by Swedish choreographer Alexander Ekman, alongside the Chicago premieres of Canadian choreographer James Kudelka's The Man in Black and Australian choreographer Stanton Welch's Meninas. These three leading artists, all former Joffrey guest choreographers, return with work in distinctly different styles from what Chicagoans have seen before. Under the leadership of artistic director Ashley Weider, the Joffrey Ballet presents Unique Voices in 10 performances only at the Auditorium Theater of Roosevelt University, 50 East Congress Parkway, February 11th through the 22nd. Each of the choreographers in the Unique Voices program is based in the classical language, but each of them has explored how that language has allowed them to find real freedom in their ideas, said Ashley Weider. When we look at our art form today, there are so many ways to dance and tell stories. We have to be open and try new things. This program is a broad sweep of styles and settings that will take you on an emotional journey. So again, the winter program, Unique Voices, at the Auditorium Theater of Roosevelt University, February 11th through the 22nd. The Joffrey Ballet. For information, log on to their website, joffrey.org, or call the box office at 800-982-2787. Look forward to talking with Ashley when their spring engagement comes up, which is coming up soon. We always have a delightful time chatting with them. And, of course, in honor of Valentine's Day coming up, don't forget Valentine's Day, our good friend Pam Rose over at Swirls, 705 West Belden. Her raspberry brownie batter, decadent chocolate cake, raspberry brownie batter filling, layer of chocolate ganache with raspberry preserves, raspberry brownie batter buttercream dipped in chocolate with a brownie heart garnish. And here's one, very new, chocolate bacon bourbon, decadent chocolate cake brush with bourbon, layer of chocolate ganache and bacon, bourbon buttercream, bacon heart garnish. All available in gluten-free and vegan gluten-free options. So you don't want to miss Valentine's Day, because your Valentine will love getting a cupcake or a few of them from from Swirls. Call Pam at 773-404-2253. Again, Swirls Cupcakes, 705 West Belden in the Lincoln Park area. Call Pam Rose, 773-404-2253. First Folio Theater, Mays Lake Peabody Estate, 31st Street and Route 83, will present Neil Simon's witty modern classic, Laughter, on the 23rd floor, opening Saturday, January 31st at 8 and running through March 1st. The production stars First Foley Artistic Associate Rene Roulas as Max Prince, First Foley Artistic Associate Kevin McKillop as Ira, Callie Johnson as Helen, First Foley Artistic Associate Haley Rice as Carol, and First Foley Artistic Associate Joe Faust as Val. Laughter on the 23rd Floor is directed by Jeff Award nominee and First Folio Theater co-founder Allison Vesely. The production is dedicated to the memory of Molly Glynn. Neil Simon's hilarious homage to his days writing for the Sid Caesar Show, Laughter on the 23rd Floor, is a journey into the world of maniacs and madmen, from Mel Brooks to Carl Reiner to Lucille Callan. The Manhattan office where they worked was a giant pressure cooker and war zone with big egos vying for attention. As they frantically scramble to top each other with gags, they also struggle with the rise of McCarthyism in America and the changing whims of their NBC bosses, bent on making these irrepressible madmen normal and respectable. The retro 1950s-style set designed by Angela Weber Miller was created to look like the NBC offices in New York City, where the writers of the fast-paced, creative, and hilarious variety show Your Show of Shows worked. Costume designer Emily Weaker will be outfitting the cast in classic 50s styles, from conservative business suits to elegant cocktail dresses. Cassie Schillo, who designed the props, had the unique challenge of making sure period details were correct with 1950s office desks, chairs, typewriters, staplers, wastebaskets, and fans. And on the line with us right now is the award-winning director, having staged such theater classics as Blithe Spirit, Driving Miss Daisy, Private Lives, A Connecticut Yankee, and The Importance of Being Earnest, a leader in Shakespearean theater. Allison has also brought us Richard III, The Tempest, Hamlet, and Romeo and Juliet, teacher, mentor, dramaturge, proud graduate of Illinois Wesleyan University, and the artistic director and co-founder with her husband, David Rice, of First Folio Theater, located in the historic Mays Lake Peabody Estate in Oak Brook, now presenting Neil Simon's Laughter on the 23rd Floor, running through March 1st. Welcome, Allison Vesely.
Thank you, Kevin. It's great to be here.
Always great to have you. It's always great to have you. This is a fun. Neil Simon is just irrepressible, is the word, of course, everybody uses. And he's just a funny guy. Everything he does or says is a hit.
It's wonderful. We've had so much fun in rehearsal. My stomach hurts from laughing so much every single night. These guys crack me up so much.
You know, he's the type of guy who touched on so many different, what would you say, subjects and themes, like compassion and friendship and marriage and infidelity and marital conflict and sibling rivalry. And some of it was semi-autobiographical. He's a Jewish guy from New York, of course. But it's still funny to us in the Midwest or on the West Coast or wherever his plays are portrayed.
Well, he creates such fully human characters. I think that's the key to it. They're not caricatures, they're not just, you know, a type, but they're fully three-dimensional human beings. And so you end up caring about them, and I think that's what makes his comedy so special.
Why did you choose this particular one?
Well, you know, it's been on our list of shows to do for a long time. It is a perfect piece for a number of our artistic associates, that, as you noted, Rene Roulas, Kevin McKillop, Haley Rice, all three are artistic associates, and Joe Faust is a brand new artistic associate with us as well. And these roles were almost written for them, so we knew we had the starting base for a wonderful ensemble.
Now, I'd like to think we're both too young to remember the Show of Shows, which was a Sid Caesar show many, many years ago, but it was really the first big comedy variety show, and it really made some of these great stars that we still enjoy today.
Exactly. I actually was lucky enough to go see Sid Caesar and Imogen Coca on stage.
Really?
They toured here, I'm trying to think when it was. It was somewhere in the 90s, and my daughter Haley and I were lucky enough to get tickets to go see them live on stage, and they were amazing.
Still.
I am too young to actually have watched the show, but all of that is now out there on the internet, so you can see almost, you know, I mean, there's tons of sketches that we all watched, actually, as preparation for the show to really get a sense of what that that great television comedy was like.
Interestingly enough, the reason he titled it The Laughter on the 23rd Floor is because sometimes, at various times, the shows would kind of practice on the 11th floor and the 12th floor of the NBC building, so he just combined those to make it the 23rd floor.
Yes, I read that, too. That's a really interesting little insight into Neil's titling there.
And, you know, we remember watching the Dick Van Dyke Show with Mary Tyler Moore. That was kind of a takeoff of this also.
Absolutely. Absolutely. You know, it was where the writers from your show of shows, you know, wrote that. And it very much parodies those people, those writers of that era. And certainly the female character on that show is a parallel to, you know, people like Lucille Callan and other female writers. So, it's definitely a takeoff on that.
Is it more difficult, Allison, to direct a show like this than it necessarily would be a more serious drama or a tragedy that you're doing for Shakespeare or something like that, only because you get so engaged in it and you become part of it and you're laughing all the time?
Right. You know, there are different difficulties. I mean, with a drama, you're kind of having to push your actors towards this emotional truth. Here, you know, there certainly is an emotional truth to it, but it's more about the timing and how the words land and the interaction between characters and the speed, the tempo, the rhythm of the show. So those things become very important, and there's where the challenge lies, is finding the correct rhythm of things to really let those gags land for the audience.
Well, you and David have had such success with First Folio Theater, and you've had it because you have a eclectic mix of various plays that you perform. How do you choose them?
You know, it's a big negotiation every year. I'm the artistic side, and David is the financial side, so we're always, you know, negotiating with each other to figure out what is a well-balanced season that gives a nice variety for our audiences, but also is artistically challenging. We take suggestions from our artistic associates and try and, you know, work that in. We try to make sure that there are, you know, at least every year or so a good plum roll for each of those people to work on. So, yeah, it's quite a negotiation, and we read a lot of plays, and, you know, we even have incorporated some new work now into the seasons. So it's quite a balancing act that we do.
I had the opportunity, starting out when she came on the show and we chatted with her, to have the opportunity of making the friendship of Marcia Mason.
Oh, yes.
And who was married to Neil Simon,
right?
For a few years.
Yep.
And we were at to dinner one evening, and I said, well, it must have been great. You know, he's a pretty funny guy. He says, but you can't laugh all the time. I thought, well, but very, very sharp and very on top of things and very much like Charles Dickens, observing everything around him and how it, you know, equates to us as the common man, which is why we're laughing at Felix Unger and Oscar and why we get these feelings that we do when we watch these shows.
Sure. Well, Neil Simon actually sort of appears in this show. The character of Lucas is based on himself as a very young writer starting out on this show, you know, your show of shows, with all of these great people around him. His shyness in trying to get his comedy heard and growing as a member of the ensemble of writers and developing those friendships that lasted him, you know, have lasted him his whole life. There's a wonderful documentary out there called, I think it's called The Writers, something like that. It's all of these guys reunited and sitting down and talking
really
about the process of being in the writing room. It's a wonderful piece of video that you know, again, we did a lot of dramaturgy on the show to give the actors a sense of the period and who these people were that they're actually portraying. So that was one of the things that we watched, along with my favorite year.
Wasn't that a funny one? I enjoyed that a lot. With Peter O'Toole on the movie. Yeah, Peter O'Toole
on
the movie.
Yeah, based on the same group of writers. So,
yeah. And, of course, I mentioned in the introduction Angela Miller and Emily and Cassie, who do such a great job setting the ambiance of your show of shows.
Exactly. I mean, we want the audience to walk in and go, okay, I'm at 30 Rock. This is the writer's room, and this is this period. And they've done a wonderful job. The pieces that they found of furniture that just evokes that mid-century modern, you know, look and feel, but also like the grungier aspects of it, you know, where you feel like these people have lived in this room and thrown things at each other and thrown pencils up into the ceiling when they were bored and, you know, that kind of feeling and a lot of the thought process on the walls of planning a show. So they've done a great job.
Now, what's next up for First Folio?
Next up after this is a play called Love, Loss, and What I Wore.
Another comedy.
It's another comedy.
Yeah, there you go.
It's, you know, a wonderful play written by Nora and Delia Ephron, based on a collection of stories by Eileen Beckerman. And it's an interesting little piece. It talks about women and their relationship to clothing and various points in their life where a certain piece of clothing was important to that moment. Talks about their mothers and their lovers and all of that. So it's a great piece of theater that I think not just women will enjoy, but also the men who love them and want to understand them will enjoy.
Now, are you enjoying the directorial side of things, or do you miss being on stage? Or
You know, every once in a great while, like every 15 years now, I get back on stage. But, you know, mostly I wear the director's hat now, and I really love that because I was an actor. I think I come at directing from a little different point of view. I'm a very collaborative director. I love getting the feedback from the actors as to their point of view on the piece that we're working on so that they can incorporate those thoughts and feelings into the whole process. And it makes it that much more personal and lived in for them. So I'm a very collaborative director when it comes to the work I do.
Well, I think that seeing some of the press releases coming out, David is doing more acting now than he has lately.
He did a bunch last year.
Yeah, he did.
He's put that hat aside for this year, but he's working on more writing now. So that's we'll have some great announcements coming up about our next season. Yes, we're already planning 14-15. And 15-16.
Right.
Because we have to plan in advance pretty far. But he'll have some pieces that he's writing in those two seasons. So,
well, I look forward to that.
Exciting.
Yeah, look forward to that. Certainly look forward to seeing Laughter on the 23rd Floor. Inspired by Neil Simon's early career experience as a junior writer along with his brother Danny for Your Show of Shows, the play focuses on Sid Caesar like Max Prince, the star of a weekly comedy variety show circa 1953, and his staff, including Simon's alter ego, Lucas Brickman, who maintains a running commentary on the writing, fighting, and wacky antics which take place in the writer's room. Max has an ongoing battle with NBC executives who fear his humor is too sophisticated for middle America. First Folio Theater in its 19th season of bringing high-quality performance of Shakespeare and other classics to the stage. During that time, the theater has expanded from an annual summer production to a year-round operation with three separate and distinct stages at the historic Maze Lake Peabody Estate. Following Laughter on the 23rd Floor, First Folio Theater will present Nora Ephron's poignant play Love, Loss, and What I Wore, which previews March 25th, opens March 28th, and runs through April 26th. First Folio Theater, Maze Lake Peabody Estate, 31st Street at Route 83, will present Neil Simon's witty modern classic Laughter on the 23rd floor, opening Saturday, January 31st at 8 and running through March 1st. Laughter on the 23rd Floor is directed by Jeff Award nominee and First Folio Theater co-founder Allison Vesely. And the production is dedicated to the memory of Molly Glynn. Who's Molly Glynn, Allison?
Molly Glynn was the wife of Joe Faust, who is in the show.
Uh-huh.
She was a beautiful actress and mother and friend. She worked for us twice. She was in our production of Unnecessary Farce and also performed years ago in a production of The Comedy of Errors. And we love her and miss her every day. She left us too soon.
Certainly did. Certainly a great tribute to her to have people on stage thinking of her as they're working with her.
Yes, very true. With us always.
Always delight, kiddo. And say hello to David for me. A website or phone number if people like to get some information?
Sure. Website is www.firstfolio.org. Phone number is 630-986-8067. And you can purchase tickets at either one.
Well, thank you for taking some time, Allison. Always great to chat with you, and we'll look forward to seeing you out there.
Thank you, Kevin.
Thanks, dear.
Take care.
Bye-bye. Allison Vesely, one of the great ladies in Chicago theater and the artistic director and co-founder with her husband, David Rice, of First Folio Theater, located in the historic Mays Lake Peabody Estate in Oakbrook, now presenting Neil Simon's Laughter on the 23rd floor, running through March 1st. Should be a great evening in the theater. I'm looking forward to it because everything Mel Brooks is associated with, and he's one of the characters in this, and certainly Neil Simon writes is funny, and this especially because it tells about a time in TV history which is very unique and something it's great to revisit. I have to go on YouTube and see if we can see some of the excerpts from Your Show of Shows. Remember with Sid Caesar. Well, that about does it for our show today. I thank you for sharing this last hour with me and hope you, our listeners, have enjoyed this time as much as I have. I'd especially like to thank our guest, Melissa Thotos, one of the brightest stars in the world of dance and the founder and artistic director of Thotos Dance Chicago, now presenting their winter engagement entitled Chicago Inspired, February 21st at North Shore Center for the Performing Arts in Skokie, 9501 Skokie Boulevard, and March 7th at the Harris Theater for Music and Dance, 205 East Randolph. Don't want to miss that. And Allison Vesely, artistic director and co-founder with her husband, David Rice, of First Folio Theater, located in the historic Mays Lake Peabody Estate in Oakbrook, now presenting Neil Simon's Laughter on the 23rd floor, running through March 1st. For information, 630-986-8067. Finally, a famous writer once said, one ought, every day at least, to hear a little song, read a good poem, see a fine picture, and if it were possible, to speak a few reasonable words. I hope on our show today we have, at the very least, done just that, spoken a few reasonable words. At that, I'd like to wish everyone a good week, and as that British group once said, and in the end, the love that you take is equal to the love that you make. Happy Valentine's Day. I know the way I feel for you. It's now or never. The more I love, the more that I'm afraid. In your eyes I may not see forever. Forever. If we can be the best of lovers, yet be the best of friends. If we can try with every day to make it better as it grows, any luck then I suppose the music
the music.